This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. The final hour of the Rob Brown Show starts now, and I do have to give a shout out to the president of the Greenville Triumph and, of course, an absolute believer in supporting local sports as we do here on the Rob Brown Show. Thanks to Kyle Mountain of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits coming by. Chris said, you know what? The Bits are an affiliate of the LA Kings. I'm going to audition the LA Kings goal horn. The LA Kings goal horn sounds like this, Lonzo. That's not bad.
It sounds like a big old choo-choo train. Is it a choo-choo train?
That's not bad.
It's a choo-choo train.
So a lot of them are. There's train horns. There's lighthouse fog horns for some of them. Like they all have their own. Their own specific sound to them. Mark Benetti, the mouth of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, suggested, and Chris Lewis will approve this one too, as he is a Rangers guy, the New York Rangers goal horn. Got a little more bass to it.
If you're hearing that, it's already too late. Abandon your vehicle.
I think the Bruins have an interesting submission. Theirs. It's that foghorn sound, right?
I think we're back to that's some sort of nautical vehicle of some sort.
But I got to tell you, I'm very partial, and maybe because I'm a little bit biased, I'm a little biased towards the Hurricanes. Theirs is just.
It does have a dark side of the force kind of feel to it.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. There's another one that I don't know. I got to look up because some of these teams change their goal horns years to year. Here's the Predators. Which in Music City checks out that it sounds very like church organy, right?
I would just be curious. I mean, this is definitely a semantic down the rabbit hole thing. Of lining all these up and playing them together and see if they achieve harmony, because they're at different octaves, and you know what I'm saying. And it would just be interesting.
Texter said, "Rob, you're really horny today, aren't you?"
Yes, he is.
You know what? I've just decided. You are all here for a moment in Rob Brown Show history, because what I've just decided is good text. Get a goal horn. All right. You send me a text that good, you catch a goal horn, Selly.
The fact that you're having to yell over the thing, which, I mean, get louder than you've... I mean, luckily you've calmed down after hour one and two, because those were amazing. But you're... Well, I guess I could just turn your volume down a little bit, but it's just...
New rule. A great text... A great text catches a Selly, baby. You lay up the apple for the slapshot dime, and you catch a goal horn.
Have you ever got to push that button?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes. Nobody was in the building. It was well in a pregame, because you got to test it out pregame, make sure it's working. Because there's been a game or two where it didn't work, and you got to scramble to get the sound guy to go find a goal horn to play through the system. And so we got to test that out every game, and there was a game that I was up there already, and I have a little, calm with an FBI earpiece in.
Yeah.
And I was up there, and this was 2 years ago when my girl Terry was the she works for the Predators now. She got hired from the Swamp Rabbits to go run game prods for the Predators in Nashville now.
So it's not just the players and coaches that can move up. That's interesting.
Yeah, she got hired from the Swamp Rabbits to go run. If you go to a Predators game, she runs the show like she did here. And now it's my homie Alexis. So last year I was up there, and she was down in the tunnel. I had my earpiece in, and she's like, "Rob Brown, are you in the box?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "I forgot to test the goal horn. Can you hit the button? Can I hit the button? Ma'am, I am going to drop an elbow on the button like a Macho Man Randy Savage at WrestleMania 3. I'm coming down on that button like it owes me money, all right?" And I did. And here's the fun thing. Because it's air-driven, there's only so much air in the horn. So if you stay on the button, it goes until it's out of air, and then it's like,
"Oh, that shouldn't be as cool as it sounds."
No, I got in trouble. I haven't been allowed to push the button since. But I laid on that button like somebody just cut me off in traffic.
You probably scared some people half to death.
Everybody in the building.
Yeah.
And then I aggravated the crap out of them because it goes like 35 seconds before it runs out of air. I let the whole thing go. She's like, "Okay, that's enough. I can't hear you over the horn. What did you say? I can't hear what you said over the horn." All right. That's it. Texter said, "Go Tigers, Kentucky sucks. Hit that goal horn." That might be it. That is it. Good text, catch the horn. From now on, good text, catch a celly with the goal horn. I love it. That's in. That's a new thing we do here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Good text, catch a horn, celly.
So if you don't catch one, it's not because you forgot. It's just because your texts suck. That's what it's going
okay,
to be.
Okay, you understand. Okay, let me rephrase it. Good texts get read.
Great text. There we go.
Catch a celly.
Clarified.
A text saying that I'm feeling very horny today. Catch a goal horn celly, without a doubt. Well done. All right, you're all here for Rob Brown Show history as a new piece of lore is added to the canonical legend of the Rob Brown Show. Well done. Your goal is now to get a goal horn text. You pull that off, you get to go to work to brag to your friends and family. Because, I mean, I got to tell you, I think that like one, maybe two of those go off per show. Max one or two per show. Great text. Get a goal, Sally.
James says bad texts should get the meow. They do, because they're usually from Tiger fans.
That feels inappropriate.
I enjoyed it just as much as you did pushing the horn.
You know who's not getting a goal horn celly today? That one was just so I could play it one more time. Mark Schlereth, Big Stink. Now, Big Stink had a moment on the show in an audio blitz last week.
He's just always kind of annoyed me. So, I mean,
I'll tell you what I feel about Schlereth, respectfully to Big Stink. I feel like about once every 2 or 3 months, when the NFL stuff's getting hot and heavy, I feel like Schlereth feels like he just has to say something to get himself propped up into the conversation. Honestly, like respectfully, I feel like Stink every now and then feels like he has to say something just to get talked about.
You know, that's exactly what a Mark would do.
Schlereth yesterday was being asked about the three-game suspension that was handed out yesterday to Texans linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair. And here is what Big Stink had to say. I want your gut reaction to it. Okay. Stink, he did not start to slide late.
All right. So
he did not.
So I would suggest if he didn't use his forearm and come down like that, maybe he wouldn't have been suspended. Maybe.
I want to say
that was the slide. I do agree that the late slides are something that the quarterbacks are using, including Patrick Mahomes has used this a couple times, made it look like he was going out of bounds. He didn't slide, but But the defender gives up because they don't want to take a chance of getting in trouble for hitting them, and then he's gotten 10 or 15 yards out of it.
Well, remember,
so quarterbacks are taking advantage of this.
Remember, this was a conversation at the college level because we had, and I'm blanking on who it was. Was it Kenny Pickett? It was Kenny Pickett, wasn't it, with a fake slide a couple of seasons ago during either the end of the season or right up to a bowl season. They had a fake slide where he kind of simulated the start to a slide.
And then now they have the rule that they can't do it.
And now they have the Pickett rule, which is why now the rule is, and this rule is in the NFL as well. The player is down at the moment they begin a slide. So even if they simulate it, they are still down. Now, if it's being poorly officiated, that's one thing. As a matter of fact, and you know a guy that I am a big fan of, but I will go here. I think if it was correct, I don't remember if it was the Kansas City game or another one, but there was a game, if I recall correctly, that Josh Allen got away with was simulating a slide to avoid a hit and then kept going, right? Like he had the ball tucked away and he like kicked his front leg out as if he was going to slide, but then he kind of leaned forward into that leg and kept going and was allowed to go on. And a guy pulled up on the tackle and Josh Allen picked up another 8, 9, 10 yards before his next round of contact. I think the solution here is the minute a quarterback starts even a simulated slide, he's down automatically, wherever the ball is. Even if he doesn't go down, and what you're going to have, there is going to be a fight to this, which is a quarterback is going to say, well, what if I put a leg and move back, right? Like I try to jump back. We saw, who was it? Saquon Barkley, I think, a couple of weeks ago, kind of got to a point going out of bounds. I know Mahomes has done this a bunch of times,
too. Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah.
Where he gets to the sideline, and they hit the brakes to let a tackler go in front of him. Oh, Lamar Jackson did it at the end zone. Hit the brakes, let a guy go in front of him, and then goes in, walks in for the tutty afterwards. To me, those were never simulated slides. Like, Mahomes not getting busted up for simulating a slide.
But
he's getting busted up for simulating going out of bounds then cutting up, right? And to me, that is a much more difficult problem to solve. That Trevor Lawrence slide, please don't hit me with, oh, it was a, you know, it was a late slide and Azeez Alshayer didn't have time to pull up. Bull crap. Yes, he did. And I know that because it happens once a game in every NFL game where a quarterback goes into the slide and Trevor Lawrence was like 9 yards away from Alshayer. Alshayer had the time during the from the start of the slide from Trevor Lawrence to the contact with Azeez Alshayer. He had time to change his direction, to square up with Trevor, to accelerate towards Trevor, to shift his center of gravity forward in a dive, to load up, as Lonzo pointed up, loaded up that arm and rocket into the head of Trevor Lawrence. Even if, let's say, the hit wasn't avoidable, a pure forearm shot to the helmet was. But I absolutely disagree with Mark Schlereth. There was more than enough time for Alshayer to recognize the slide and pull off the hit. Certainly pull off the hit directly to the dome, but to avoid the hit on Trevor Lawrence. This is, and on top of all of that, the reason that, because I know Nick Caserio, the GM of the Texans, came out and said that the punishment of Alshayer was, amongst the other words he utilized, bull in its entirety. He said, quote, "What we take umbrage with, took issue with the depiction of Alshayer's character." He said, "What we take umbrage with is the picture that's been painted about Azeez. His intentions, who he is as a person, quite frankly, it's bull. And it's unfair. He was elected a captain after being a blah, blah, blah." I don't care. What do you mean his history? My dude, the guy has been fined, that I could find, at least 5 to 6 different times. He put a hand around the throat of Tom Brady at one point. And not like a part of the tackle, my hand, like very clearly went for the throat. He has been fined 2 or 3 different times for clearly late hits out of bounds. I'm going to say this. If that was an unavoidable hit for Alshayer, he doesn't need to be out there playing football. He just doesn't. because there was more than enough time to react. I'm going to tell you this. I ride a motorcycle. When you go get your motorcycle license, one of the tests that you have to pass, Alonzo, is they put a an obstacle on the ground, like a brick or something, right? And the instructor stands behind that. And you have to drive towards him. I had to do it at 20 miles an hour. You have to drive towards him. And when you get 15 feet away from him, he points in a direction, left or right. And you have to recognize that direction, make the adjustment to steer the motorcycle, and you have to clear that obstacle in whichever direction he points to you. I promise you, that is, at the very worst, the same amount of time that Al-Shaair had to close 8 to 9 yards of distance from when Trevor Lawrence started his slide. I'm sorry. You are not convincing me that Azeez Al-Shaair did not have time to make the adjustment, and you're making it even more difficult to convince me when you are trying to convince me that a guy who has been fined at least 5 different times for inappropriate contact on the football field, oh, this one was totally an accident. 5 different times, at the least 5 to 5 is what I found in a cursory glance. And you're telling me that cat, 5 times he's been fined for this, that cat didn't have time to react? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. What do you want him to do? It's football's a split. This is why I said, you remember what I said yesterday? I think we are over-legislating football, even from a player safety guy. For instance, if a defender goes up to block a pass and he misses the ball and hits the quarterback in the helmet, that should not be a 15-yard penalty. It just shouldn't be. All right, I'm down for player safety, but a guy slapping a helmet ate 15 yards worth of damage, okay? But in this case, there was more than enough time for Al-Shaair to pull up off that hit. And then he laid a gnarly hit right to the noggin. That's not it, man. That's not good enough. Quick break. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show with the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob and the great one Alonzo with you here. We have spent quite a bit of time this AM breaking down the college football playoff rankings, which were released yesterday evening. And to some groans and moans from the Carolina fans. They check in at number 14, and immediately after the rankings were released. After the rankings were released, the chairman of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee jumped on ESPN and said that aside from those playing in the College Football Conference Championship games this weekend, no one else could do anything to change the committee's mind on them. My question is, should that be the case? And here's why. South Carolina went on the road and knocked off Clemson this past weekend. Lonzo, if Clemson goes into the ACC title game and they beat SMU by 50 points, shouldn't that make South Carolina's win over Clemson even more impressive? Like, that to me is a failure of logic. If we can look at the college football season and we can say, hey, your week 4 win over Alabama's week 4 win over Georgia is the reason we put them above Miami, Ole Miss, and South Carolina, then why is it that South Carolina's win over Clemson a week later, as opposed to 8 or 9 weeks later, can't be utilized to make their case even stronger?
Well, it's one of those things where I compare it to Penn State and Indiana, because SMU hasn't lost a game in the ACC, but who did they really beat? I don't know. Did they beat the biggest names in the ACC. So technically, they're going up against what has been the juggernaut of the ACC and Clemson. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that Clemson could beat them by that much. I don't think they will. I think SMU is going to win. But if Clemson did that, it wouldn't shock me.
The best wins that SMU has on the schedule is a win over Nevada, if you count them. They have a win over number 22, Louisville. They have a win over then number 18, Pittsburgh. They have a win over Duke, who was in the top 25 for a brief period of time. And that's pretty much it. I don't disagree that the SMU Schetti isn't all that impressive.
They could be Indiana or Penn State. They could very well be.
I think SMU could beat Indiana, to tell you the truth. Yeah. I do. I think they could beat Indiana. For the record, I think they can, not saying will, I think they can beat Clemson. We had Denton Day from SiriusXM on earlier. He's as objective as it gets, and he said he's picking SMU. Vegas has picked SMU. They're 2.5-point favorites. Now, I think.
I predicted them from the beginning.
You did.
The beginning. So I do think they're going to win. But if they lose, and they lose convincingly, I'm not going to go, man, I was completely wrong. It will be that Clemson showed up and they played, and it would prove that SMU hasn't played anybody.
I am fine with any of those thoughts. But if Clemson, even as a 3-loss team, goes in, and I do think for South Carolina's sake to use this as an argument, which I think they can and should. I don't know if the committee will take it into consideration or not. I do think this is part of the reason that the committee chair last night was so quick, Ward Manuel was so quick to get on ESPN and poo-poo the thoughts of any non-conference championship contenders improving their stock this weekend. I do think that it would be a fair argument that South Carolina going on the road and knocking off a top 12 Clemson team on the road, especially coming off of, granted, they had a tune-up match against Wofford the week before, but they had a stretch of top 25 Southeastern Conference games leading up to that rivalry game. I think it would be a fair argument for South Carolina to say, if Clemson beats, I'm talking beats, not escapes, not kicks a walk-off field goal. I'm saying if that final score ends up being like Clemson 35, SMU 14, Clemson 42, SMU 20, something like that, right? I mean, they thoroughly beat SMU. Then I think it would be very fair for South Carolina to say, wait a minute, Bama ended their season by getting the dog snot beat out of them by Oklahoma, a team that we went to their house and kicked the crap out of them. That team kicked the crap out of Alabama. And then they ended up at home beating up on a 5-win Auburn team. Yet we, granted, had Wofford the week that Alabama was playing Oklahoma, but we had a stretch of top 25 teams before that, won them, and then in the final week of the season went on the road to a top 12 team, beat them. It was not a convincing win, but it was a win on the road nonetheless. Beat that team, a team that turned around the very next week, overcame that loss, and won a Power 5 conference crown. This concept that, and I've said it a couple of times, that I do not think that conference championship losses should be damaging. But Clemson losing this game, I mean, what's a loss matter to them? They're out of the playoffs if they lose this game. Winning, you're in. L and you go home, right? I don't think that a non-playoff team, or I don't think a conference championship losing team should be jumped by a conference championship non-participant. Right? I don't think South Carolina, for instance, should be able to jump a team that played in and lost their conference championship game. I don't think, and this is just me, I don't think that Indiana, that Alabama, that Miami, that Ole Miss, or that South Carolina, I don't think any of them should be able to jump SMU. Even if SMU gets hammered, I don't think they should jump SMU. The only team from nine, a spot behind SMU back, the only team I think that should be able to jump SMU, would be Boise State for playing and participating in and winning the Mountain West Conference Championship game. No one else should be able to jump SMU. If SMU wins that game, it won't matter because they would be one of the four highest-rated conference champions, but they should be able to jump Tennessee, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and I think those are all the teams that are competing in a conference championship game ahead of them. But I think they should be able to jump non-conference championship participants. But I do think that the results of conference championship games should be able to impact other teams. I do not think you should be jumped by non-championship game participants, but I do think your heads-up results against a conference champion should be considered. So, if Clemson was to knock off SMU and come back from the dead to win the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship and to make it into the playoffs, whether they catch the first round bye or not, if they do that, because keep in mind, if Clemson wins this thing and Arizona or Iowa State win the Big 12, they will theoretically still be ranked ahead of Clemson. And if Boise State wins, they would be, the Big 12 would suddenly go from you only have one team into, you got a team in, but it's on the bye. They would jump up and potentially either be the third or the fourth conference champ. You would have the Big 10 champ in either Oregon or Penn State. The SEC champ is the two seed in either Texas or Georgia. You would have the ACC champ as SMU or the Big 12 champ, or excuse me, in SMU or the Boise State Mountain West champ in the third seed. And then you would have the four seed be either Clemson or the winner of the Big 12 game. And right now, both Big 12 participants are ranked ahead of Clemson. So likely they would catch the fourth bye, assuming a Boise State win. And Clemson's playing in the first round, probably as the 12th seed on the road. Probably going to Ohio State or to Notre Dame. Probably Notre Dame. Either way, tough game. Lot to go. That's what you get for losing three. But the point here is, if they win this weekend the ACC, then I think there absolutely should be a little bonus added to South Carolina's resume for the year. They should get credit not just for the win over Clemson, not just for a top 12 road win on the way. They should get credit for beating a playoff team. They should get credit for beating a team that ends up as a Power Four conference champion and in the playoffs at that point. And if that's not enough to move them ahead of Miami, and that's not enough to move them ahead of Alabama, I don't know what else to do.
So I'm curious, what happens if Clemson wins and Penn State wins and Georgia wins and UNLV wins?
Okay.
And give Iowa State.
Give me that again.
If Clemson wins.
Clemson wins the ACC.
Penn State wins the Big Ten.
Penn State wins the B1G.
Georgia.
UGA wins the SEC.
And UNLV beats
UNLV Boise State. Beats Boise in the Mountain West.
And what's the other one?
Big 12, which is between the 15 and 16 Arizona State and Iowa State.
Yeah, that one doesn't matter because they're ranked 15 and 16.
It does matter, but because they are both ranked ahead of UNLV.
Okay, so let's say Iowa State wins.
Okay, and let's say Iowa State wins the Big 12. We are looking at your Big Four champs being the ACC champ being Clemson, Penn State being the Big Ten champ, UGA being the SEC champ, Iowa State being the B1G champ. And I'm doing this off the top of my head real quick because I know we're late for a break. What you would have is, I believe, you would have Penn State be the one seed. You would have Georgia be the two seed as the SEC champ. You would have... I'm gonna have to do this during the break. You would have let me do this. Let me write that with those being the consideration. Let me write out the bracket during the break, and I'll tell you what that looks like when we come back, including a couple of other possibilities. Mainly because I'm dumb and there's a lot of numbers here. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. This is the Rob Brown Show. This is the Fan Upstate. All right, so Lonzo asked the question going out of the break. What happens if you have just a metric buttload of upsets that were to take place in conference championship weekend? That would be Clemson knocking off SMU, Penn State knocking off Oregon, Georgia knocking off Texas, UNLV knocking off Boise State, and the Iowa State, Arizona State. Doesn't really matter where they go. They're kind of standing right next to each other at 15 and 16, both of them right behind South Carolina. That game, by the way, Iowa State, Arizona State taking place at noon. So is Ohio and Miami. The SEC title game on Saturday is Georgia at Texas at 4 o'clock from Atlanta. Marshall is at Louisiana at 7:30. Penn State at Oregon in the Big Ten title game is at 8 p.m. in Indy. And a game I will be at, the ACC title game, Clemson is at SMU. That one at 8 o'clock up at BOA in Charlotte. If those rankings go, if Lonzo's predicted round of madness takes place, and all those upsets take place, which, by the way, there's zero of these games I think are impossible upsets. Zero of these games are impossible upsets. UNLV has already given Boise State a run for their money at one point. Georgia ain't the same old Georgia, but I don't think Georgia is dramatically worse than Texas. Penn State knocking off Oregon's probably the one that I'm least confident in the upset happening. But is it impossible? No, not necessarily. It's about as neutral site as it gets. And Iowa State, I mean, it doesn't really matter who wins the Big 12 being where they're at. So if we filled out the bracket with upsets, the way I think it would shape down would be that Penn State would go from 3-1, at least in the bracket seeding. Penn State would be the one seed. Georgia, who is currently the second highest ranked team of these champs now, would go to the two seed. Iowa State as the Big 12 team. Who is ahead of, assuming Iowa State or Arizona State, again, pick your winner there, who is ahead of Clemson, would go to the three seed, but Clemson would go all the way up to the four seed. Clemson would get a bye in this case. That would bump, of the teams that lost, that would bump Oregon to the five seed. It would bump, scratch that. And this is where, Lonzo, that question I've been asking all week comes into play. The question I've been asking all week is, how much, if at all, do you punish conference championship losers versus non-conference championship participants? And here's what I mean. Notre Dame, obviously not playing in a conference championship game. They are in line to be the five seed right now. If Oregon loses, does Oregon go behind Notre Dame? Or do they stay ahead of Notre Dame? Because if they drop from one down to ahead of Notre Dame, they're the five seed. The five seed is rewarded in that case with a home game against the 12 seed. And you know what their second round matchup would be? A neutral site game against Clemson in this case, right? Now, it might be more advantageous in this case to be the sixth seed, because if you're giving me the opportunity, Lonzo, between Clemson and Iowa State, I'd rather play Iowa State. All due respect to Iowa State.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the sixth seed might be the advantage. So again, the question's asked once again. Would Texas fall from number two and stay ahead of Notre Dame? Or would they fall behind Notre Dame? Because this might, maybe Notre Dame goes from being the five seed, because we've got to replace Oregon and Penn State, or excuse me, Oregon and Texas ahead of them, they could fall down to the sixth seed. But assuming that undefeated or one-loss conference champions who take their second loss in the conference championship game or their first loss in the conference championship game would not drop behind Notre Dame, that would likely mean that Notre Dame at that point would go down to the seventh seed. After Notre Dame, next up is Georgia. We've slotted them as the SEC champ. After them would be Ohio State, which means Ohio State, Lonzo, would be the 8 seed. You would be playing a home game against the 9 seed. Assuming everything stays the same, the 9 seed would be Tennessee. Now, again, we're back to that same question. Conference championship participants who lose. Are we dropping SMU back for losing to Clemson? Because if the answer is yes, they're out of the playoffs. If the answer is no, SMU becomes the 10 seed and would play a road game against Notre Dame. Now, I'll tell you right now, I like SMU. I like Notre Dame in that game a lot more. I like Notre Dame in that game because it's in South Bend, Indiana, in the middle of December. Respectfully to SMU, this is why I hate cold weather football. I'm less against it in college because the resources aren't there to dome every stadium. But SMU going to South Bend, I've been to South Bend, Indiana in a late November game. It is blistering cold, and there's not a damn thing around South Bend, Indiana. The wind whips through there. SMU wants to be able, with Kenning Jennings, to throw the ball to keep defenses honest, to open up the run for him. I like Notre Dame in that case, right? So here's where I can't answer. I can't fill in any more of this bracket. Does SMU, with the loss to Clemson in the ACC title game, do they drop out? Do they drop behind Indiana? And in this case, Boise State's out. Do they drop behind Indiana but stay ahead of Alabama, who they have fewer losses but participated in more games? Do they drop behind Miami, a team in the same conference but who did not participate in the conference championship and have the same amount of losses at that point? I don't know. Let's say we don't drop anybody. That's going to put SMU at the 10 seed. The 11 seed at that point with a Boise State loss, the 11 seed at that point would be Bama. Do you know where Bama goes for their opening round matchup? Texas. They would be on their way back out to Austin. I don't think that is an uninteresting matchup, Bama v. Texas. They had a good game last year when they played each other. Maybe that's interesting. I don't know. And then the 12 seed in that spot, assuming no one drops out, the 12 seed would be Miami, with Ole Miss and South Carolina being the first two left out. This is why I'm saying there is not a path to the playoffs for South Carolina anymore. It hurts. It stings. But there's just not one. When they put Miami and Ole Miss ahead of you, you got screwed.
Even with all that chaos, if that chaos should happen, there's still no chance.
Nope. This is what I said. I prepared you for this yesterday. I told you yesterday that if South Carolina did not check in at 12 at the absolute worst, then they would still need a bunch of help. But if South Carolina could not find a way to number 11, There to me, even yesterday, was no path. And not only did they not find their way to 11, because I really thought that there was at least the potential. There was at least the potential that South Carolina would get the committee to put them over the two other SEC teams, Alabama and Ole Miss, who they are. They're better football teams than today. But you lost the head-to-head matchups. And again, when you ask me the question, hey, Rob, who's playing better ball? Who'd you put a paycheck on right now, South Carolina or Alabama? The answer is South Carolina. Who'd you put a paycheck on, South Carolina or Ole Miss? I'd put it on South Carolina. But in order to make that your distinguishing mark, what you are saying is your number one test is the eye test. They just look like they're playing better ball. And they are playing better ball against better opponents, for sure. For sure they're playing better ball against better opponents. But you are saying the eye test is your number one metric. And I am not telling you that you are wrong for that. This is why it's so subjective. This is why there is no way to write down a formula to figure out who's in the 12. There's no way to do that. To say, all right, you know, flow chart it. If X, then Y. If Y, then Z. And if Z, then this team goes. There's no way to do that. So if you're going the eye test is the most important metric. I just look and I see the 12 best teams. Okay, good. I'm good with that. But there's also a lot of people out there who believe that head-to-head in-season matchups matter. Now, I would make this argument. Head-to-head in-season matchups should only matter if everything else is pretty much equal. In this case, between Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina, everything else, with the exception of strength of schedule, is pretty much equal. And I don't know, as good as South Carolina's strength of schedule was, I don't know if it's so dramatically better than Alabama that I can say the strength of schedule is so much better than Alabama's that the heads-up loss doesn't matter anymore. That's why this whole thing's interesting.
All right, time to ask Rob what is X-ing, and he will tell us why. The first person who's X-ing is Joe Burrow.
Joey B. X-ing. Real quick, I do want to address this text. Texter said, if Clemson wins, Alabama is out because they will not punish SMU by moving them down three spots. Would you bet me a paycheck on that? Would you bet me a paycheck that Alabama is not bumped out? Because I asked Ryan Horvath that question last night, and he said no. Joey B. is trending because the Bengals stink, yet Joey B.'s going for 7,000 yards this year.
No, a couple of weeks
ago. New haircut.
Couple of weeks ago, a major item went on sale, and he just bought one, and that would be he paid a couple million dollars for one of the tumblers from The Dark Knight. And these are fully functional, and they have heads-up displays. They got sound systems in it, all that.
Not street legal. I did see that.
So Joe Burrow is now Batman.
Is Joey B me? I think he's me, but with, like, better hair and millions of dollars.
I am curious how he fits in one of those, and if they would have to redo the seat to make, because he's what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Let's see. Christian Bale is 6 foot on the dot. Joe Burrow's height is 6'4".
Yeah. So, hey,
I'll tell you right now, straight up, if I got to compress my ass 4 inches, but I get a Batman tumbler?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And
all in.
Well, actually, and being able to afford that would be kind of cool, too. The next thing that's X-ing.
Dude, if we had $100 million sitting around, we're both buying one, right?
Yeah, we're in trouble.
We're racing them.
Yeah, we are.
Somebody meet us out in Pickens, boys. We're going racing.
And probably got a good shot of crashed on and still surviving.
Does it come with a dope little motorcycle, though?
No, I don't think so.
That's what I want.
I don't think so. The next person that's X-ing is Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei should be X-ing every day. She is America's sweetheart. Okay? Sit down, Julia Roberts. Marissa Tomei is America's sweetheart. She's trending because she just publicly asked me out on a date on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't think that's why.
It's
her
birthday. Worth a shot.
It's her birthday.
Ooh, happy birthday. I'm not even going to guess her age. She's timeless. She's ageless. She is amazing.
She's older than what you think, probably.
65.
Okay, she's 60.
Oh.
But still.
Marissa, still.
Is that in your range?
Still, that's Marissa.
Still 60s in your range.
Marissa, okay. You're in my age.
Okay.
You're
all
my
right.
age.
The next thing that's X-ing, and I don't know if you knew this. This is very important. National Signing Day.
It is National Signing Day. Rob, why haven't you been covering National Signing Day? Well, because the people who care about National Signing Day, you're following National Signing Day. The people who care about National Signing Day, you know more about these recruits than I do. Listen, I will talk about a class and a composite, and that's an important thing, but I'm not going to get into the individual decision-making process of 16 and 17-year-old boys and where they go decide to play football. I will talk about the recruiting process and the coaches that I think are doing the best job, and Shane Beamer's absolutely one of them without a doubt. But I'm not going to break down player film. You want to know when to ask me about the 2024 recruiting class? 2026, when I've seen them play college football.
All right, the next thing is X-ing is Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch got to be coming back soon, right? Like, they got to throw it after the War Games. They've got to throw a wrinkle into the women's title picture, and Becky Lynch is going to be that wrinkle.
All right, she just showed up at a Netflix media event for WWE.
And as Netflix moves over to Raw, Netflix wants all the stars that they can get to show up, and there was only one star in women's wrestling bigger than the last kicker.
Charlotte Flair.
Nope.
For sure.
Where's Charlotte Flair been? What's she doing
she
right
was
now?
Injured. She had a
That's
major.
Fine.
She had a major injury.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Becky Lynch coming back makes her second only to Mommy.
No. When the Queen comes back, she will outshine everyone, and that would be Charlotte Flair. And finally, Harrison Ford is X-ing.
Because it's his birthday too.
No. No one can figure out why he's Xing, and we got the old Denzel tapping his chest thing. Everyone's worried because he's Xing.
Real quick before we get out, Texas said they used the eye test last year for Alabama and the name on their jersey earlier this season, and they only cared about wins when Alabama lost to Tennessee. No, I was screaming at this last year, and all of you said I was a butthurt Florida boy. I tried to warn you a year ago. Loan you alone. I let no ball. Listen to me. Have a great day. Don't drink and drive. I'll punch you in the face. See you back here tomorrow for the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Later.